Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Surviving My Podcast. My name is Matt. I'm so glad you've tuned in here, and I have another special treat for you, as this is the second Mental Health Megacast, a combined show between myself and the amazing Wes from Audio Rising and Mike from Mike's Open Journal, three guys discussing pretty much any mental health topics that come to our mind, things that are in the news, in social media, our take on our own struggles, and pretty much anything else we can come up with that, again, is all mental health related. So this is the second one. I'll be sure and link the first one in the playlist so you can listen to it as well. And of course, after listening to this one, I would encourage you to check out Mike's version of it and also Wes's on their own websites. Same thing, only their intro and outro. So it gives us each a chance to load it up and to just have a great time discussing something that we're all passionate about. So sit back, relax, and enjoy Mental Health Megacast Episode 2.
You've just tuned into Surviving My Past, a survivor podcast about my life with dissociation, anxiety, and PTSD. Join me in raising awareness and inspiring others. Are you ready? Let's rock this healing journey.
Okay, well, I'm here with my two recovery-minded survivor friends, Matt and Mike, and we kind of got into an impromptu discussion or conversation about mental health issues or mental health struggles, not really having a face or a look, and it's already prompted about 3 minutes of conversation just between the three of us, and I think it's true, because there are plenty of times when, people can look at us from the outside and go, man, what's wrong with this guy? He's got no problems. He's a well-rounded, vibrant young man, in Mike's case.
Yeah, the young bit's right. Wow, I'm clinging on to that.
Yeah. But I think that's kind of part of the idea of in most relationships, like work relationships or just general relationships, as far as society is concerned, we seem like everybody else, and we all know that that's most definitely not always the case. Even though you find every day that there are more and more. You recognize that there are more and more people that are more like us. So I guess that begs the question we always ask, quote unquote, what is normal? You know,
I think I've tried to stop. It's really difficult because it's just like cultural, isn't it, to say normal? But I've tried to stop saying normal and say like traditional or something else. It's probably just as bad, but it gets away from, I think, in your mind, you have a vision of what normal is, and it's probably not the same as what someone else has, but it never feels like a helpful term, I don't think.
No, that's a good point.
Yeah, you're right. And I think, sometimes normal is what society tries to make it out to be, and then people try to fit into what, normal is. Mm. Normal people go here, they go here, they do this, they say that, they wear these clothes, they have this type of lifestyle, and anybody who doesn't conform to that, can feel like an outsider. So you're right. And normal is really, it should be what we own, what we make it our own. And, our normal is not what somebody else's is, and that's okay. And especially when, when you're a survivor or, recovery from some other type of, traumatic situation or whatever it is, we're not going to be what quote unquote normal is. And that's okay, because we, our childhoods weren't normal. Our past wasn't normal. And, to the outside looking in, a lot of times that creates that dreaded stigma that we all hate and that we're all trying to fight. So, I don't generally use the word normal too much, but I find myself using it from time to time. And, I try and catch myself because, it can be something that makes you feel less because you're not living up to what society thinks you should be.
Right. And as you're saying that, I'm thinking to myself, it really does start when we're kids. You know, I mean, if you think of all the things that you just listed about what you wear, what you dress, the music you listen to, the, you know, the whatever you're into, and, you know, those are the times when we feel that society pressure or peer pressure. It's like, well, I got to step up and be more like this, or I have to like these clothes, or I have to like these bands, or I have, you know, those kinds of things. And we just kind of carry that into adulthood, don't we?
I think so. I think it's like you say, it's like everything, isn't it? You learn it from other people. It's what childhood essentially is. It's learned behavior from the people that you're around in terms of language or expectations, your environment. And I think as we get older, you start to realize sometimes what some of those things mean or the outcome of that. And most of the time that's good and you don't really draw attention to it. But then you have situations like ours where you're discussing kind of the terminology of a particular word, and then you realize that there's a lot more to it, and for some people that can be quite harmful.
Yeah, and you know what else is interesting and funny, and not in a funny haha way, is mental health seems to have a normal, or you know, people look at somebody who has a mental health related issue or condition or whatever you want to call it, and they seem to think that we are, you know, we can't contribute to society, or we should just be blending out, you know, blending off in the corner somewhere and not like trying to be a positive member in our community or try and make a difference. Like it almost feels like people think we're helpless because we're supposed to look a certain way or act a certain way, or because mental illness in general, has this theme to it that people think that really, you know, we're not. And I hate to play the victim here because I don't want to do that, but I think a lot of times people who have severe mental or physical disabilities who maybe aren't able to do as much as somebody who has a different type of traumatic past, we all kind of get lumped in together, and there's nothing wrong with any of us, but to all too many people, if we're not what normal is, then we're all lumped together. And that just irritates the hell out of me. I mean, it really does.
Right. Totally agree. I think it's one of those things where historically, if we have some kind of a chemical imbalance, mental disorder, whatever the case may be, we're lumped into that locked in a rubber room schizophrenic type.
Exactly. Yeah.
Doesn't really have a grip on reality type of thing, which we know is not the case, you know, for sure. For the most part, we're all productive members of society. We all support ourselves. We all support our families. We all, you know, we deal with day-to-day life, and it's kind of like a functional mental disorder. I saw an article a couple weeks back, and I still have forgotten to read it, but it was called, the title of it got to me, and it said it was talking about a high functioning depression, you know, like a highly functional depression. Yeah. And I think I might have brought this up before, but the way I relate to that is when you talk about drug abuse or alcoholism or something like that, it took me a while, but I found out that I was a high functioning alcoholic. Just because you're an alcoholic doesn't mean you're standing on the corner with a sign, you know, looking to get a bottle of, you know, Thunderbird or Mad Dog 2020. And, you know, there's a lot more to even that than just so to lump us all in. And like I say, now there is a label, you know, that's been around for decades of, you know, here's paranoid schizophrenia. Mm-hmm. And then there's all these other things. And I think because the outward look of mental health issues has historically been that doesn't have a grip on reality, sees different things that aren't there, those kinds of things. I think that's what we're all supposed to be. Again, you know, well, we're not even normal as far as mental health, or mental issues. You know what I mean? It's like a PTSD or an anxiety or a depression or something like that doesn't completely knock us down. So people don't know what to do with us. You know, it's either one end of the spectrum or the other. There's no gray.
Yeah, I think when you're talking about the spectrum as well, I do think there's that almost the perception that yeah, you're completely crazy. You're the person that I read about in the newspaper where you suddenly get up and go and attack somebody because you're crazy, or you're the person that's just a little bit quirky and you're making a big deal out of it. And it's like, you're one of those two, or that's kind of people's perception, I think, a lot of the time of mental health.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it's unfortunate because today, and I say this today because I'm not really sure how to phrase it, but like today's mental health person, it's, I mean, they're everywhere. And I think it's, you know, we don't always realize that there's so many people that have, that suffer from extreme anxiety or depression, or, you know, they're a recovering addict of, you know, of some method, or they've been abused as a child. And these people are businessmen and factory workers and truck drivers and waitresses and you know, lawyers and all these people in society that, you know, they walk down the street and they look perfectly quote unquote normal, but you realize that, you don't always realize that so many of them have a past that has, you know, troubled them and haunts them, and they're trying to work through. And I think it speaks to the resiliency of survivors of abuse, or you know, those who are recovering from addictions, or whatever the case may be, whatever your mental health related background is. You know, it goes to show that you know, we really can, and we are making a difference in this world by overcoming our past and being able to work through it and to be able to be productive members of society and be able to stand up and make a difference and write about it and talk about it and blog about it. And, you know, it's not that we have to stand outside, you know, with a sandwich sign or you know, with a little sign that says, you know, I'm a recovering abuse survivor, or I'm a recovering alcoholic, or whatever the case may be. But I think it's important that, you know, I want to do my part to really spread the word, to let people know that, you know, we are everywhere, and you know, we're not just the extreme cases of, you know, people who are unable to function on their own. We are on the other spectrum too, and everywhere in the middle. And you know, I think the word is getting around because of people doing more things like we're doing and raising awareness and writing about it, but there's still such a long way to go. I mean, this country, the U.S., is just riddled in so many problems right now. And, you know, I mean, mental health is right up there with all the issues with race and everything else that this problem, you know, this country is having. It's sad. It really is.
And there can be a, you know, that stigma, that can also be kind of a discriminatory thing over here as well, just like race or anything else. It's like, oh, he's one of those people, you know, he needs to be pushed off in a corner because he can't deal with reality, or, you know. And that's the thing. I mean, it sounds cliche, but we don't want to be treated any different than anybody else, because for myself, I have to, if I don't know how to deal without outside social situations, I need to learn anyway. So I don't want to be treated any different. I don't want to bring about, you know, I don't want to lead a conversation with, yes, I'm on medication for severe anxiety.
Right.
But I also have 20 years of customer service experience. Can we, you know,
working in customer service, you need anxiety medication.
Right. Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. I remember my first job in customer service. I had a headset on. I was sitting at a desk. Oh, boy, I've come a long way, haven't I? Anyway, I was sitting at a desk and I had a headset on. I was a nervous wreck. I'm sweating like a pig. But on the outside, it's like, look, this is what you're training to do. This is what you want to learn how to do. And you just motor on through it somehow or another. And isn't that what everyone does to one extent or another with work situations, with family situations, with whatever the case may be, is we all have struggles. And I think what I'm finding in this social network that we're part of is that, you know, everybody's got struggles and theirs really aren't that different from ours, you know, and it makes me feel more included. And you guys probably run into this too, where people will, you know, they feel safe around you because you've somewhere along the line mentioned a struggle, and they'll talk to you about their struggles, which is a huge thing. People don't do that unless someone's willing to be open and honest first.
I think, you, like you say, because you don't And I don't think anyone really wants to go in and have that conversation and start it up with, oh, I'm affected by, or I take medication for. It's kind of that offhand comment sometimes that opens up that discussion, or people like ourselves that maybe talk on a podcast or on a blog or something like that, that I guess open the door for that conversation with somebody else to say, oh, I was affected by, or I didn't realize that you'd gone through something similar. And then you can have that conversation that just wasn't, I guess, possible before. I don't know if possible is really the right word, but that conversation wasn't happening before.
Right. And because of the stigma, it really couldn't happen, you know, not making us feel anywhere near safe anyway, you know.
Yeah, and I think even some of the people that I've spoken to, so people that I've known for a long time and some not so long, it's still been a case sometimes of that person's kind of, I'd say, recovered in some way or progressed from where they were struggling a lot more. But because they've not necessarily spoken out about it, they've kind of got through in their own way. And they, even some of those people, I don't think are open to the diversity that there is within mental health, the challenges that different people face, the fact that the thing that was affecting them affects so many other people. And sometimes it, although it could be depression or anxiety for us, actually, that can still affect people in a lot of different ways, even if it's the same illness.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting too. Sometimes, you know, and I know that this is the case with me, is I generally have a very quiet, calm demeanor about me. And, you know, there's certain people that are obviously, I mean, like, I think, you know, like you both said, people feel comfortable around certain types of personalities, certain types of demeanors. And those who have any type of, you know, traumatic past, or, you know, or are recovering from some type of illness or addiction, we tend to be very kind-hearted, open people, and that kind of embraces the whole, you know, helper mentality, the whole understanding, the whole non-judgmental way of life and, you know, demeanor that we put out to people. Because I know I've talked to a lot of people who you know, maybe we don't sit around and discuss in-depth issues all the time, but every now and then they'll say something like, you know, I've always felt real comfortable around you, or I always felt like we could, you know, hang out and chat about this or that. And, you know, it just kind of reinforces that people who have been through hell and back like we have, you know, we know what it's like to go through the stress and trauma and be alienated, and we don't want others to feel that way. So I think it bodes well to be able to let people feel comfortable around us, and when those tough conversations come up, that they know they have somebody that they can confide in. And even if we haven't been what they've been through, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, anxiety still sucks and depression sucks. And, you know, we know what all these things feel like, even if our past circumstances are different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot more similarities between them than there are differences, is what I always end up saying, is because I can read a blog from someone who's dealing with, you know, with severe depression or episodes of depression, and then they come out of it, and or bipolar or whatever. It doesn't have to be my exact issue, and I can read so many similarities in there. And a lot of it has to do not with maybe I'm feeling how they feel, but I've been made to feel how they feel by family members, by friends, by whatever, and those are the areas where I can relate. And so the overwhelming urge for me is just exactly what Matt said of, I may not know exactly how you feel, but I know you shouldn't feel alone. I don't want you to feel alone, and I can't tolerate running across someone who feels so alone.
I think in my mind, again, I don't know, like I wonder whether our views are slightly different just because you talk out and you get to talk to more people, so you're maybe more aware of different situations, circumstances and experiences that people have. But I always think of it kind of like on a scale, in that so everyone has like physical health, everyone has mental health, and it all sits on a scale. And some people get to a stage where that's particularly good or particularly bad, and that can obviously affect us in different ways. But everyone's got those, and the idea that someone sort of, I don't know, couldn't be open to the fact that you might feel or act or kind of be different in some way feels really strange to me. I can understand that they don't know what it's like or are not able to necessarily take in or be hugely understanding, but just to be so close-minded to it sometimes I find really strange, just because of that kind of idea in my head that you're all sitting on the same par. You just, some people are at one end, some are at the other, but we're all on that same scale. I don't know if that makes sense at all.
Yeah, and I think I see where you're going with this, and I think it kind of ties into what I was just thinking as you were talking, and that is, how do I phrase this? Because I just lost my train of thought because I was listening to Mike talk, and I got something really cool to say, and damn it, it left. So, Wes, say something until it comes back.
It's that English accent man crush that we've both got going on, dude. It's totally understandable. There's probably a group for that too.
There probably is. I was like, I got it. Okay, Mike, I got it, and then bam, just gone.
Do you have it back, or is it still gone?
It's gone. It's completely gone.
Okay. Well, then I'll chime in because I think. And I like the way Mike said it, and he says, if that makes sense. And I'm like, oh, that totally makes sense, because you're looking at this scale, or you're looking at this spectrum, and there's, a million different colors in between those two spectrums, but everybody's sitting on that same scale.
Yeah.
We're all, it's like, oh, we're all in the same boat, we're just in different parts of the boat, and some of them leak a little, yeah, and some of them are drier, and, but we all are in the same, and I just said to someone the other night, they said, what really irritates you? And I said, what really aggravates me is when people feel as though they're so much better than you or me. And people, I said, it irritates me even more when people feel they're so much less than you or me or everyone else. And I think that plays right into exactly what you're saying, is that, yes, there is a spectrum. Yes, there is a scale. But all of us are sitting on it. Mm. We're all there.
Yeah. And do you guys ever get people saying this to you, whereas, because we work so hard to try and conquer our past and work through it and, fight through our demons and all that, that people say, I never knew that you had this, that, an issue, or when somebody finds out or you clue somebody in that you have a traumatic past of some sort, they'll be like, I never knew that, that you were this way, because you always seem so happy. You always seem so good. You're always helpful to everybody. And I'm like, well, I'm always helpful to everybody because I don't want them to feel alone. I don't want them to have to go through something by themselves or to feel like they're the only ones. And, I may seem like I am kind of happy-go-lucky and have it all together, but that's because you either A, caught me on a good day, or B, I'm really good at hiding what I don't want you to see. And for me, it's more of the latter, because I try and really, I work in corporate America, so I don't, go around telling people, hey, I suffered from childhood sexual abuse and I was bullied and, my mom was a narcissist and all these things. Like, I don't go in through and say that, but there's a handful of people that work with me that I trust that know about this. And, when they first found out, they were like, dude, I had no idea. Like, I really had no idea. And so, it kind of goes to show that, the way that we want to portray ourselves and the way that we want to put forth so much effort to work through our healing, that I guess I'm kind of going down the path of people oftentimes don't realize how in depth our hurt and our past goes just by the way that we seem to act in everyday life. And this all goes back to us feeling normal again and looking what normal is, because we try to fit in so much.
Yeah. It's a nice loop back to, I managed to scribble my thing down before I forgot.
I need to do that.
I only realized earlier. I was like, quick, find a pencil. It's at the beginning when we were talking about kind of judging a book by its cover and that sort of thing. And I think it's that idea of people not necessarily knowing, or you act a different way with different people. But I don't know, I'd feel like actually, regardless of mental health, I'm probably different when I'm with different people. I'm different, like you say, when you're at work, you're different when you're with family and different groups or types of friends. And I think I wouldn't say you're necessarily acting in those situations. You just have or find yourself in a certain role that you play within that group, or it's a certain version of you, I guess. And then I kind of feel like the mental health aspects that come out of me, I kind of try and keep those away from those people, which obviously makes it a lot worse. But then you kind of push that to one side, and that's a different version of me, and it will spew out when I'm on my own, and I won't share that with you. And I think that's why sometimes people don't realise how bad it is, because they don't necessarily see that change in you over those days, weeks, months, years. And that will sort of spew out to the side, and it's as to how much you can kind of control that sometimes kind of keeps that away from people. So the difference between where you are and where you were, and whether that's a case of getting worse or better, they wouldn't necessarily know that. And I think there can be a big change, not necessarily because of the acting, but I think because of that sort of role that you fit into and the role that you want to play within groups, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm sitting here trying to jot too, because I'm thinking to myself, there's a lot there that could be unpacked, is as far as I think we do. The first word that came to my mind was overcompensate, but that sounds negative. It doesn't sound quite right. But I think we do spend an awful lot of time policing our own mind and trying to observe other people's reactions and try to be more even keeled and try to come across calm. And I think we get better at it than we give ourselves credit for. Mm-hmm. And so while we see this chaotic mind that's going in 10 different directions, other people look at it and go, well, no, man, you're... I do remember early in recovery when we would go into our what we call a closed group, where you have the same group of men meeting week after week, and you kind of get to know each other on a different level. And I remember, while we're talking about past traumas, family things, stuff like that might have helped lead to our self-medication issues. I did bring that up and talked about, anxiety. I believe it was there from I believe I was, biologically predispositioned to have these things, but I think they were exacerbated by my family of origin and all these things, and I was going into the medication and all the other stuff. And one of the guys looked at me and he goes, dude, you are the last person I would ever think would have any kind of an anxiety issue. So, I mean, that goes right into what Matt's saying, is where people look at you and go, I never would have guessed, I never would have known. And it's like, well, we get a lot of practice.
Yeah.
We get a lot of practice. Because if I envy any type of person, it's a type of person who can be on the inside what Matt just described being on the outside. I never get too high, I never get too low. I don't fly off the handle. My problem is I may not fly off the handle in front of you, but I'm flying off the handle internally.
Oh, yeah.
And I hate that. I hate that. I just wish I could be more of what I portray.
Boy, you know what? And you are so right. It seems it can be hard to practice what we preach or practice what we hear. And I tell you, when you said about overcompensating, I'm shaking my head like, yeah, dude, like I overcompensate so much. It's not even funny. Not so much when I'm writing, because that's just me being real, or doing these podcasts. We are who we are. But I'll give you a prime example of overcompensating. I am, as we were talking about before we started recording this, I'm sitting here recovering from some minor elective surgery right now. And, I had monster anxiety going into this thing. I mean, I was scared to death. I mean, literally, I was. I mean, I can sit here and tell you I was freaking scared. And, it wasn't like a necessarily like a life or death, type of situation. But the fact of going into, the hospital and, just the smell of it and the people and the atmosphere. And like, I got myself so worked up, and I was trying to do mindful breathing and I was listening to some quiet music. But, on the inside, I was like blowing up with anxiety. But on the outside, I was sitting there calm and cool, like, you know, I got this. I'm all right. I can handle this. Like trying to overcompensate in the way other direction so nobody would look at me like I had six heads or something like that. But you know what? You know what's really screwed up is, and or is weird or whatever. When I got back to the room, like the prep area, and they were starting the IV and all this kind of crap. Like I got so nervous that like I couldn't hold it back anymore. And when the nurse left to go get the doctor and whatever it is the nurses were doing at the time, like I had, and I'll tell you this, guys, like I had tears going down my eyes because I was sitting there by myself, and I was so scared because I was nervous. I was by myself, and I mean, I've only ever been to hospitals twice, and once was for wisdom teeth extraction, and once for this. So you know, I don't go very often for any type of procedures. I just have been fortunate enough to not have to go through that. And like I sat there listening to my music, trying to hold back tears, and I swear to God, they just came rolling. And I had to compose myself for a couple minutes, thank God, before they came back, because I lost it, dude. Like I broke down from overcompensating so much. I just couldn't take it anymore.
Right, and that pressure will come out one way or another. You know, I mean, that pressure will be relieved one way or another. And the weird thing is while you're saying that, while you're describing it, I'm trying to put myself in that position, and I'm saying, you know, from the nurse's point of view or the doctor's point of view or the anesthesiologist or whoever, they probably see that 10 times a week. But from our point of view, it's like no one has ever acted this, whatever, fill in the blank, silly, or, you know, we always want to downplay how we feel as being quote unquote stupid, when in all honesty, it's quite normal. And they probably see it 10 times a week from people that deal with these kinds of things. Or, you know, I remember once, I think it was my father-in-law saying, you know, people always say minor surgery. And he goes, if somebody's going to cut you open, there's nothing minor about that. You know?
You know what? That's a good point.
It doesn't make any difference how big the incision is. Surgery is surgery, you know? And it can lead, we talk about this a lot in recovery, it can lead you to being, you know, kind of a chameleon syndrome, where we feel pre-programmed to pull out whatever part of our personality when we walk through a door. And I think that's okay as far as demeanor, but where I try to combat that is when it comes to agreeing or disagreeing with people just because of who's in the room. And I have a real hard time with that because I kind of grew up in that codependent atmosphere of just keep down trouble by agreeing with everyone kind of a thing. And what I found in recovery that caused me to do, that I'm looking at in my mental health issues now, is, okay, Wes, who are you? You know, if you're not being told how you should think or how you should feel, then who are you? You know, where's your identity in all this? Screw what everybody else thinks. What do you want to do? What are your dreams? What are, you know, and I sit there and go, I haven't got the slightest friggin' idea.
I think I'd say I've had times when definitely when you don't feel like there's a, you feel like maybe someone's saying something you don't necessarily agree with, and you sort of question yourself like, oh, do I really want to disagree with them, or should we just like kind of stay quiet and just go along with it? Is it worth it? And I guess you self-judge, because rather than give your honest opinion, it's almost like you have to quantify to yourself how much do I think this and how much do I want to say this and I think it's like,
would I rather be right or would I rather be at peace?
Yeah, like, I have to be 100% certain that this is true, accurate, and I definitely think or want to do this. I can't just put it out there as a discussion.
Right. And isn't that part of what we were discussing before about just being the oversensitive, you know, the person who cares, the person who wants to, I mean, our feelings are pretty well close to the surface, I think. I know mine are, but as far as them reaching, as far as them going up over my vocal cords and coming out of my mouth, that's more difficult, you know?
Yeah.
I guess I try to sympathize with everybody or empathize with everyone is probably what I try to do.
Yeah. Like how do they feel? What are they thinking? Like, how will it affect them if I do this?
Right.
You know, that's, I mean, I'm sitting here thinking, oh my God, you know, I mean, you guys are so right in that I find it difficult to disagree with people. And I'll be honest with you, more so around people that I know than people that I don't necessarily know that well. You know, I mean, I've always been more of a people pleaser. You know, I've been more of a blend into the crowd type of person. That's just my personality, not necessarily due to any of, you know, my past. I mean, that's part of it, but I've always been more of a, you know, follower than a leader in some aspects. And, you know, I don't like to necessarily stir the pot a lot up until the last couple of years when I've become more confident and more vocal about things that I believe in. And I think for me, I am more apt to disagree or stir up a possible controversial conversation or topic with people who I don't really know that well than somebody I do know well.
Yeah.
I mean, I think maybe it's because I feel more comfortable around strangers because I don't know them or something. I'm not sure what the reason is, but I do know around people that I know, be it family members or close friends, you know, I don't usually stir the pot all that much. I mean, I just don't. Unless it's something so unbelievably outrageous, then I'll jump in. But if it's something where, you know, there's a general discussion and my opinion may or may not necessarily make a difference, I'll usually tend to just kind of shut up and agree. But, you know, around strangers, you know, like if you're sitting around and you're outside having a cigarette, you know, if you smoked or if you're at a restaurant and you're at a bar or something, or you're just at work at the coffee, you know, at the water cooler, and people are talking about this and that, I'd be more apt to say, no, I don't think so. I think it's more like this or that, rather than just agree. I mean, I don't know if you guys ever feel that way. Or
yeah, I've had experiences before when in different workplaces where I don't know whether I felt like I knew more or I didn't care what people thought. I don't know. But yeah, definitely, I think I probably came across as a bit of a knob. and I could be quite argumentative with some stuff and quite sort of, this is what I think. And you can disagree with me if you want. I don't mind you disagreeing, but we're going to talk about it and you're going to get me to understand why you think what you think. And if I remember having, I think we were having a meeting and it was about, I think, 5 or 6 of us in the team. And I ended up kind of sitting there arguing with our manager about how we were going to collect feedback. And they wanted to collect it all on paper, like the old traditional way people fill in surveys and we collect them. But to me, I was like, well, we've got the technology to collect this electronically. It saves us all of the time of typing up all that information. I don't see why we're sticking to something that's just an old way of collecting data. And they weren't prepared to kind of take the risk on trialing something. And yeah, it's not something, I don't know. I don't know if I would do that now. I'm not sure. But it's definitely a case of just being confident in, this is what I think. And if you don't agree with that, then that's fine. But I need to understand why you don't agree with that and what your reasoning is. And then that's fine. But yeah, definitely came across as, I think, a challenging employee.
Damn, Mike stirring the pot again.
Oh, man, can't you just tell? Can't you just see that? It's so easy to see. He's so controversial and contradictory in everything that he says and does. It's just a minute. I'm kidding. Matt, I think we should be pleased that obviously we're the two guys on the planet that he does get along with.
Yes, yes, I'm glad for that. I'm glad.
Yeah, I'd much rather be there than on the other side, being the manager that's getting, you know, dressed down in front of everyone. And you know,
don't use paper, damn it.
Yeah,
fill out a survey, and we will compile the results electronically. And stop killing trees.
while he's talking about doing everything electronically instead of on paper, I think I aged 10 years just sitting there listening, because I'm like, and I'm electronic. You know, I'm not any good at it. But I mean, if you show me how to do it, I would much rather do it electronically and have ease of access and all that good stuff, rather than piles of paper and stuff like that. But I was just getting older and older and older. orders weren't printed out when I first started working. They hung on a wall on a clipboard. So, you know, it's just
after they were printed out with a Xerox machine.
Right, with the little bubble jet.
With that purple ink.
Yeah, the purple ink. Yeah.
You Mike's know. Like, what the hell are you talking about?
Right, exactly.
It's become History Channel.
History Channel.
What the hell, man?
Mike, just shut. No. I remember standing at a... you can Google this, Mike. I was standing at a fax machine with someone. And, you know, it's the same paper that you use for printer paper. And I remember saying to someone, I go, you're probably too young to remember the old rolls of onion skin paper that they used when fax machines first came out. Of course, they looked at me like I grew a third eye. I had no idea what I was talking about. And now people look at the entire concept of a fax machine as, oh my God.
They're like, just email it.
Yeah, just shut up. How old are you? Just put it as an attachment and send it to me in an email.
Scan and send it. I know.
Just scan it. Get over it.
When someone says to me, can you scan it? My immediate reply is, no, I don't have a printer or a scanner. Can I just take a picture of it and text it to you?
There you go.
That's it. I've done that before, too.
Take a picture of your screen and send it to me as an attachment.
Yeah.
Oh, I remember when I first learned how to screenshot off of my computer at work. I was like, oh, this is cool. I'm never going to say anything again. I'm just going to take a screenshot and send it to them. And, you know, people are like, I can't open the attachment. Yeah. But,
oh my God.
And it's funny, though, because I'm kind of the opposite of Mike in that I think my fight or flight instinct is too strong because I have a tendency to, I feel my anxiety, I used to say anger, but I feel my anxiety well up in me if someone takes me to task on a point of view. So I will either clam up or I will explode. And, you know, I obviously am not, you know, going to get up with a machete or something, but, you know, kind of verbally, you know, and I get real short and I get real snippy and sarcastic. Imagine that.
No,
sarcastic.
I know, right? When would that ever happen? But no, and see, so when Mike explains how he looks at it, and I'm getting better, I guess, but it takes, like we were talking before, it takes a lot of effort for me to sit there, pad and paper or phone and screenshots and whatever, and do what Mike said, where it's like, okay, well, here's my point of view, but I'm interested in how you come to your point of view, kind of a thing. I guess I do it if I have to, but I still avoid it like the plague. You know, if you have an opinion that seems to override mine, I'll just shut up.
I think it depends on who you're around. Like I say, I'm not sure. I don't know. I'd like to think I would still do that, but I don't think I've been that forceful yet at the place I work now. So I think it does depend on who you're around and what the situation is, what you're relationship is like with those people as well.
Well, and you don't want to have that reputation as being a bad seed all the time.
Yeah,
you
know,
here comes Mike, don't disagree with him, he'll never let you out of the room.
Yeah. Someone my manager actually from that example came to a meeting at the place I work now, and when they came in they were like, oh, we won't be too long, we know Mike doesn't like meetings. But I haven't been like that here, don't tell.
I think for me too, like I will internally pick my battles, and that's like if somebody takes me to task on something and I'm not prepared mentally for it, or they kind of catch me off guard and drag me into a conversation, I have to quick assess to myself in my head in a few seconds, you know, do I have enough to back this up and not sound like an idiot? Or, you know, so I will sometimes, depending on the conversation or the topic, I will just start rambling and go on and on and on and on and blow up, so to speak. If I'm confident in my knowledge or my passion of the subject, where if it's something where I maybe am not as knowledgeable, or maybe I'm passionate, but I haven't, you know, but I'm not comfortable talking about it yet, that's when I'll just kind of clam up and maybe agree or just, you know, kind of, you know, fade off out of the conversation. Like, I think for me, it depends on, you know, like Mike said, like who you're talking to and what the situation is. You know, kind of dictates to me after I take a few seconds to analyze how confident I am as to whether or not I'll jump in with both feet or just kind of beg off and fade away into the sunset.
Right. And that you just described me to a T. That's me all the way around. If it's something that's in my purview, if it's something that I deal with day to day, and the other people don't, and they come in saying, well, it should be done like this, this, and this. I will be the first one to go, wait a minute, no, that's not how we handle this at all, and here's why. But again, I have to be mentally prepared, or I have to really know all the nuts and bolts of what I'm talking about. Otherwise, I just have a snarky opinion that I keep to myself.
Yeah. That's kind of the way I am. I really try and not get involved in those types of things, but sometimes at work, I just kind of get drug into conversations, you know, depending on if it's a religious conversation, I always get dragged into it for whatever reason. Or if it's, you know, and it's just inevitable because I work with guys who are way on one side of the religious aspect or, you know, field as than I am. So I'm kind of like on my own over here. So whenever there's a, you know, gang up on a certain type of topic, if they know that I'm sensitive to it, or I mean, they'll just drag me in just to get a rise out of me because they know certain times I just can't shut up. Like I can't. And I think, you know, and not just to bang on the religious part anymore, but on mental health too, I found myself much more keenly aware of people who make fun of or make light of those who suffer certain types of, or well, any type of mental health issue or any type of traumatic past. You know, I find myself jumping in and being much more vocal out loud and in public situations more ever than I used to be. And I attribute that to, you know, writing and doing these podcasts and working with a professional that gives me more confidence to stand up for. Because I feel like if I'm standing up for myself, I'm standing up for other people and vice versa.
Right. I totally agree. And I think in those types of situations, when referring to mental health especially, again, with that codependent chameleon, get along with everybody kind of thing that I've got, it's like if I felt people were being insensitive towards something I struggled with, I think I would battle within myself whether to, if I open my mouth, I'm going to go right down a rabbit hole and these people are going to be going, holy shit, I just said one thing, you know. But if it was you that someone was being insensitive to, I would lose my mind. And that probably comes from that oversensitive, overprotective, don't want anyone feeling, you know, like the outcast kind of thing. It really does come down to, and I think what I'm discovering in this conversation is that we all handle things in different ways depending on the situation, and I shouldn't pigeonhole myself and say, oh no, that's the way I always act, because it's not. It really, you guys are reminding me that it really does depend on, do I know them? What's the situation? What are we talking about? So turns out I'm a little more sane than I thought I was.
Imagine that.
Like, oh my God. It doesn't take much.
I didn't realize we were meant to be learning stuff.
Yeah. What do you mean? We try to teach us stuff about ourselves or what, man?
God dang
it. Oh my goodness. Well, we've been going at about this for about 15 minutes now, so we should probably start to wrap this up or else people are going to get bored with us, don't you think?
We probably should. We probably should. Who could get bored with us? But I see your
point.
Well,
that's true, because Mike's here, and he has the greatest radio voice ever. So,
right. It's absolutely true.
Face for radio.
So, yeah, we can.
Face for radio.
Well, after that last picture, and if you want to see it, it's at my table. After that last picture.
Yes, it's quite lovely.
Mm-hmm. It reminded me that that there's a version of a Rocky Horror Picture Show coming on TV here pretty soon in the States. So,
you're well pretty enough to be in a film or on stage.
Give them the right makeup, yes.
That's pretty much. I need tons of makeup, so, you know, I fully admit that.
Oh, well, okay. Well, then I will start my wrap-up by just saying this is one of the most fun things that I do on social media, and it does, as Matt said, build my confidence in being able to speak out on the issues that, hey, look, this is just me. You know, this is who I am, and this is what I'm trying to deal with, and at least I'm honest about what my issues are. And I'm just eternally thankful for these guys and again, I feel that men bringing this stuff to the table and talking about mental illness, talking about mental challenges that we deal with, emotional challenges that we deal with, is huge. And I'm at on Twitter at WesA1966, and that leads you to the boy. I'm going to have to edit this. That leads you to that leads you to my blog site, which is audiorising.com. Which is now the podcasts are available on iTunes, they're available on Libsyn, they're available on YouTube and Google Play, and I don't know how I got all that out, but I did. So yeah, check out my stuff, and then I will turn it over to the fellas.
Your turn, Mike.
Big pause. yeah, same really. I think I've really enjoyed the fact that this is our second episode now, and I think it only feels like we're kind of starting the conversations that we can have in the future as well. Even today, there's stuff I've kind of noted down and then not got to because it's not quite fitted in with what we're talking through. So very much looking forward to the third time that we meet up and have a chat. And just great to have that opportunity, as I think we've touched on a couple of times, to just have three guys that are happy to sit down and chat about our own situations, our own experiences and challenges, and some of those success stories as well. So you can find me on Twitter. I'm it's happened to me at Mike_Douglas_, or go straight to the podcast at open_journal_, and then all of the information around the podcast, blog, and some other bits and pieces is available on my website, which is mikesopenjournal.com. Woohoo!
All right, I'll finish this one up, and I do enjoy this whole like little round table thing that we have going on here. I know the feedback that I've gotten, and you know the stuff that I've seen on Twitter on all of our accounts is people seem to enjoy the fact that we're just kind of chatting and letting the conversation go as it is, and you know we can laugh at ourselves, we can be serious, we can find everything in between to really, you know, the more that we speak and you know it validates us, it validates other people, so I like where it's going, and I'm definitely looking forward to the third upcoming episode, which will probably be in about a month. I think that's kind of what our schedules usually permit, is one a month. So so my name is Matt. I am at Surviving My Past. You can find me on my blog, survivingmypast.net. You can find my podcast on YouTube and Spreaker and SoundCloud. Definitely give me a follow on social media, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest. It's all at Surviving My Past. And I'm happy to be here with all these guys once a month and shoot the bull and have a good time talking about mental health. And I'll shut up. How about that?
Yeah. We're just going to have a blooper reel one of these days. Oh, that'll be fun.
Oh, crap.
All right, gentlemen. Have a good weekend.
All right, guys. Take care. See you.
Thanks again for listening to another episode of Surviving My Podcast, presented by SurvivingMyPast.net, a therapy blog about living with dissociation, anxiety, and PTSD as a result of childhood sexual abuse and narcissistic abuse and bullying. My opinions are my own, and my stories are my own thoughts and my life as I live it today. I am not a medical doctor or a medical professional or a mental health professional or doctor. I'm just a regular guy trying to share my experiences in life and hoping to inspire others. You can contact me anytime by emailing me at matt@survivingmypast.net, or you can hit me up on Twitter at survivingmypast or on facebook.com/survivingmypast. See you soon!